Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
We are on the air at 5 a.m.
Is that better than good morning? Are you surprised?
Is that better than good morning?
You know, though, I kind of like the positivity in the start with good morning. We hope you have a good day, everybody. We hope today is a fantastic day, even better than the last one.
It's just too simple. It's just too simple to go with.
You mean you didn't
good morning?
What I just went with was too simple?
What, with good morning? Yes.
No, I said more than good morning.
What'd you say? Well, you're listening way too many positive affirmations there.
I know,
it's too much. At 5 in the morning. Let's be a little more negative.
Okay. Oh, I don't want to be negative, but maybe I'll just dial it back just a tad.
Oh, well. We are going to start off, though, on kind of a negative note because that's really all you're getting with the San Francisco Giants right now. Of course, the Hard Knocks first debut for the Raiders was last night, and we'll get into that around 5:30. And coming up at 5:15, we'll also get into the players' nicknames for Players' Weekend because Players' Weekend just happens to fall on the A's and Giants Bay Bridge series coming up on the 23rd and the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to that.
And there's a travesty in baseball when it comes to the nicknames.
A travesty that we will get to.
Yes.
And then don't.
No. That's why I'm teasing.
Good.
I'm adding the
good,
tease.
Good.
Adding
and,
to it.
And then we'll also go over the 49ers unofficial depth chart as it has been released. And there's a couple of surprises there at number one and number two spots for each position. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's certain things where you're kind of, it's kind of questionable a little bit. Kind of questionable. So we'll get into that, even though it's the first unofficial depth chart. But the Giants ended up losing to the Nationals 5-3. Now, last night, it didn't seem to be one of these typical Giant losses that we've seen in the month of August. They at least showed a little bit of heart. Also, the A's ended up killing the Cubs with them, putting up 11 runs. We'll talk about that in a little bit, too. But Connor Menez went out there. He had an okay outing. He was fine. He was locating his pitches fine. He's not going to give you the toughest stuff. He's not going to give you just a blow-it-by-you 98-mile-an-hour fastball. But in the end, he will give you a little bit of everything. And he went out there six innings, gave up six hits, five earned runs, four strikeouts, and gave up two home runs, one to Kurt Suzuki.
Yeah.
Kurt Suzuki's that guy that you're thinking in baseball, how has he not retired yet? That dude is still kicking.
And he was kicking the Giants in the butt last night. My goodness.
Wow.
I mean, I'm just trying to go with that.
Nice. But yeah, I mean, it's just there really wasn't anything to write home about last night. It was just a very typical loss. Whoa.
About to fall there.
Easy there.
I know.
You just fell on your chair.
Almost.
And then, of course, Joe Panic DFA'd, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. What'd you see last night, Anna?
Last night, it was just, you see the offense continuing to struggle for the Giants, losing their third straight right now. They just can't piece it together. They got some runs in and everything, but it was just too little too late. And unfortunately, whenever they finally scored, you have the Nationals being able to, you know, to counter. And, you know, Menez, he wasn't quite on his game. You know, he was kind of throwing a little bit. It wasn't right. Like, his location, I felt, was actually a little bit off last night a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just seeing this team right now, I feel like since Dickerson went down especially, that we don't have that little extra pop right now in the lineup.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is it because of Dickerson? Is it because of the start of the new calendar? I don't know what it is, but they are right now in the midst of a terrible offensive struggle right now, and you're seeing them just faltering at the moment.
You see who played left field? Stephen Vogt.
Yeah.
They threw Stephen Vogt in left field, and he went for a diving catch and just totally biffed on one. It's like, how thin are they at outfield that you have to put Stephen Vogt in left? I don't even know if they've done that this season. I didn't want to come on here and definitively say, oh, this is the first time he's played left field all year.
I feel like he had once.
But when you're seeing Stephen Vogt in left field, it's never it's never something you really want to see. You got Evan Longoria back, which is good. And then Pablo Sandoval came in and hit a couple of doubles and took over, really, and tried keeping this team alive, which he did. But then in the end, when you go into the ninth inning and you get a aggressive at-bat from Pablo Sandoval as a right-hander, which is not his strong side, and especially as he's a switch hitter. But when he comes in right-handed and he's an aggressive type of guy, he just went in and swung at three out of the four pitches, just fastball, fastball, fastball from Sean Doolittle.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the thing, too, looking at them. There's something just wrong here. They're just not looking like they're having fun. Before, that was a big thing, they were having a good time, and now there's just no life.
Losing's never fun.
No.
You know, and when
they got to bounce out of it.
Right, when they're down, but there really is nothing to bring them out of whatever this slump is, and maybe Alex Dickerson was that guy. But yesterday, Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, he joined Joe Lo and Dibs, and he talked about what Farhan could do in this offseason.
I think it's going to be a lot different. I mean, there was a point last week where I believe, you know, maybe 12, 13 of the guys on the roster were not here on opening day, and that's just what Farhan's been able to do during the season. And you do have these guys. There are some big contracts, but another year gone with some of them makes it a little bit easier for them to move. And look, this guy found a way to move Mark Melanson's money, so I think he probably will try pretty hard this offseason to move off a couple of these contracts, get a little bit more flexibility and open time for some of these younger guys and open some opportunities. That's what he's done everywhere he could, and you've seen it in the bullpen, you've seen it in the rotation, you have seen it in the outfield. I think the one area of this team where he really couldn't do much because of the contracts and because of who some of these guys are is the infield. But I would expect this offseason that he digs into that pretty hard.
So he talks about the infield and that there could be changes made. And then after we get off and go home and relax, we see that Joe Panik has been DFA'd, which means that in the next 7 days, that if another team can claim him off waivers, and John Heyman, MLB insider, says the Mets could be a likely contender. But
I mean, the New York Daily News has already put up a big a front page story saying push the panic button.
Really?
You know, Robinson Cano obviously got hurt,
yeah.
So they do have a hole there that needs to be filled. So, I mean, it's a fitting spot for him.
Which is surprising, actually. Robinson Cano has been pretty durable for his career, except for the whole suspension thing.
Just that point.
But I think, though, regardless of how these closing seasons went with Joe Panik, Giants fans still feel an affinity toward him just because he was a part of those championship teams. And I think with him, I was thinking about this morning on the way in. He's that kind of guy that was just our little secret if you're a Giant fan. He was that second baseman who was under the radar, came in as a rookie, came out swinging. You knew he had something, and you knew that him and Brandon Crawford created one of the more deadly middle infields in the early 2010s. But now this season, as he's really only hitting, what, .235 this year, .310 on base percentage, .317 slugging percentage. He's really not doing all that much. And so I think that it was only a matter of time, especially after they got Scooter Jeanette for cash considerations, and they had Donovan Solano swinging well, and they also got Mauricio Dubon from the Brewers. So it was a matter of time, but I think that all we can really do right now is we can thank him because he was a world champion with them in 2014.
And he did say thank you as well to the Giants and the fans. I don't know if you saw this, but I'll read it real quickly. He said, I'd like to thank the Giants, especially John Barr, Brian Sabian, and Bobby Evans for drafting me and giving me the opportunity to play for such a great organization. I'd like to thank Boch along with all the coaches I have had throughout my time here. Thank you to all my teammates. We've experienced some truly amazing moments together that I will never forget. And to the fans, it was an amazing six seasons. thank you for all the passion and support you have given our players. Nothing has driven me more than winning here in San Francisco. I am forever grateful for the Giants taking the chance on me and allowing to live out my lifelong dream. It is time for me to start the next chapter in my career, but in my heart, I will always be a Giant.
Right, and he knew it was coming. Yeah. He knew it was coming, and here is Farhan talking about DFAing Panic.
I've been in a situation where we've been looking to get a little more production out of that second base spot, bringing in Scooter on deadline day, and Solano swinging the bat well. Last few days, actually, Joe kind of gotten some games, pinch hit, got double switched in, somewhat. Boats talked about the day after the deadline of how he was going to use him. It didn't seem kind of fair to him to keep him in this role and probably make it actually a little bit difficult for Boats to kind of manage the roster.
Farhan, it's kind of reminded me of that stepdad who's coming into a very solidified family and he's just having a tough time really trying to
fit in.
Yeah, I guess so. He doesn't want to do anything to really upset anyone. Maybe that's just a really bad analogy because they obviously want to keep a family together if you're a stepdad. But
kind of just trying to figure your way out, trying to almost look cool at the same time, but also try not to be too cool where all of a sudden they step all over you.
Right.
But did you see Boach, by the way, beforehand, before the game? He looked pretty emotional, but when he was talking about Panic.
Yeah, he did. He did. He was
a little choked up there.
You don't see Boach like that all that often. You don't see Boach all that often. But we go back to the Alex Pavlovich sound, though, and he says that in the offseason they could be making some big moves within the infield. Well, I looked up some stats this morning, Anna. And
here we go, stats guy.
I mean, I'm wondering, with Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford, those are really the two OG infielders. Buster Posey, he's too important for the development of Joey Bart. They're not gonna get rid of him for whatever reason. But he managed to unload Melanson's contract. That's Farhan. And right now, since July 15th, I checked the stats since that doubleheader against Colorado where they started game one winning 19-2. Brandon Belt is hitting .220 with a .293 slugging percentage and a .296 on base percentage. He has a higher on base percentage than a slugging percentage. That's not normal.
No.
And then he only has one home run and four RBIs. Joe Panic since then was hitting .286, .347 with a .340 on base percentage and a .687 OPS, no home runs and five RBIs, which is not by any means any good, but it was still something. And look what they did with him. They DFA'd him. But Brandon Crawford, now, I took it after the doubleheader because we obviously remember what Brandon Crawford did. He set a record for a middle infielder in baseball. But since then, since July 16th, since the day after, he's only hitting .164 with a .194 slugging percentage and a .243 on base percentage.
Yikes.
.437 OPS, no home runs, 7 RBIs.
Ooh.
And Brandon Crawford, he's there for the value of his defense. And so's Brandon Belt, for that matter. Brandon Belt's actually a pretty good defensive first baseman. We don't really normally see that, but Anthony Rizzo's kind of taken all the spotlight in the National League when it comes to a defensive first baseman. But I'm looking at this infield, and it just doesn't seem like, Farhan's going to have any sort of patience with any of these guys.
No, and as we were talking about from the start of the show about these offensive struggles, there's your problem right there. I mean, you do upgrades in both of those, when it comes to offense especially. Obviously, their defense and what they mean to the organization, it'd be very difficult to replace them. But at the same time, you replace them offensively with an upgrade when it comes to the offense, you're going to obviously all of a sudden see the numbers go up, the runs go up. Everything's going to just improve because those numbers are just abysmal.
Right, and I think he's in a tough spot, too, especially with just how the prospects work out right now, because their top four are all outfielders so far. So they got their outfield solidified. It's just a question of what they can do in the infield. And if they could somehow get someone in the offseason, acquire another hitter and offload this contract, I'm curious to see what Farhan's going to do. Obviously Brandon Crawford has that full no trade clause, but Mark Melanson had one too. So you really don't know how this is going to work out. There are loopholes around this stuff, but I'm reading those numbers. Brandon Crawford, that since July 16th, .164
Jeez.
With a .194 slugging percentage and a .243 on base percentage. That's not good.
No, Giants fans better not let nostalgia get in the way of this one.
It's
as much
not
as everybody
good.
Says, in the beginning before the trade deadline, everyone was saying, oh, you can't trade Mad Bum now. Everyone's going to be upset about it. You know what? Put that aside. I hate to say it. As loved as they are, and You appreciate what they've done here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Might be time to move on.
And from the Chilton Autobody text line at 95795 from the 510, Giants didn't have to have Scherzer or Strasburg struggling against subpar pitching. They couldn't beat the Bad News Bears right now. Stick a fork in them, John. In Pinole, you're 100% right. And to add on to that, they didn't even have to face Patrick Corbin either. They didn't have to face any of their star pitching. Anibal Sanchez coming out, who was once, I think he was with Detroit at one point. He was okay there, but they haven't faced any good pitching whatsoever. And when you're looking at who they beat back when they were on this little run, they were beating everybody. I mean, even DeGrom. So it's... Yeah, it's really that's what's really alarming is the fact that they face pretty much no names when it comes to pitching. But coming up, Players Weekend, it's going to be on the 23rd and the 24th. That falls on the Bay Bridge Series. We have the names for you coming up next. Also, the A's just thrashing of the Cubs, which I think a lot of A's fans, if they're still somehow salty from 2014.
Yeah, I felt that. I felt that a little bit last night. I got a little satisfaction last night with this win.
They might have enjoyed
a little bit more satisfaction.
Might have enjoyed that a little bit. Plus, we'll get into Hard Knocks too because that first episode was out, and I think that a lot of people were overreacting to it. And then also we got the 49ers unofficial depth chart. We'll go over that next. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakanaki's in with you on 95.7 The Game.
Wants no part of sitting Nick Bosa against the Cowboys.
Bull crap. Get out there and play. Go play a series. What has he done in the National Football League that you don't suit his butt up and go see what it's like to get hit in the mouth? Go out there and make a freaking play. Show me you're better than your brother. Line up against Dallas Cowboys and play for a series. I'm getting so mad.
Are pretty mad now.
This is the Bay Area's football station. 95.7. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kakarakis.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with our product experts. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. So, we just discussed the Giants. They DFA'd Panic, and we realized that every infielder, for the most part, except for the third base position, has been struggling mightily. And now we move on as the A's destroyed the Cubs 11-4. And do we count those last few runs as garbage time runs? There's such thing as garbage time minutes. I think we can count it as garbage time runs right now because they put up a four spot, but that meant nothing.
No, because you kind of throw out pitchers that either may be struggling at that point or you're just kind of like, you know, you give them a little chance when you normally wouldn't have put them in. That's about when the game's on the line. So, yeah.
You knew the Cubs were done, especially. I mean, before the A's even put up eight runs by the second inning. Like, you could tell, like, John Lester was just disheartened. Like, his body language wasn't there. He was sweating. He was swearing at the umpire for the strike zone. He was blaming it all on everyone else but himself. Like, that's just a moment where you know, and you're watching it, you're just like, yeah, all right, there's nothing really they could do about this. Because, I mean, when they come out there and you get a guy like Dustin Garneau who comes in and hit a three-run home run, I believe.
Hey, or was it
a
solo?
Yeah, and then he comes in and hits one. It's disheartening for that guy.
It's got to be disheartening, and it's a little satisfying for A's fans after what happened with the wild card game when he had the big trade with Yoenis Cespedes. Because as much as back then, I hate to open up, you know, put salt on an old wound here, but that one just hurt when at first you're thinking you lose the heart of your lineup, but the idea of, okay, you need a solidified ace in order to get past a wild card game or, you know, when it comes to the postseason, but it didn't work out. And so in a way, I know that it's kind of long time gone. It's still a little satisfying.
Well, you know what, though? Who knows what, I mean, if we're just going back to the Yoenis Cespedes trade, we've seen him just really not show up on the field all that much since those years. So if you would have given him just a big old contract, who knows what could have happened, you know? I mean, you never like if you're just expecting the same thing that he's been doing along with the Mets as well as the Red Sox, then it's just like, I mean, I don't know. I look back at that trade and you're just kind of like, okay. I mean, I guess at the time it sucked.
I understood. It sucked, but I also understood it at the time.
Right.
I was like, I don't like it, but I get why you're doing this.
And in return, they ended up getting Johnny Gomes, too, who turned out to be kind of a fan favorite. But we just had to mention at least that 11-4 game because we got a lot to get to today. We really do.
We really have a lot. I mean, but good to see the A's mashing right now. They're still half a game out right now, but... Yeah, let's keep on rolling. But they've got some good nicknames, actually. They got Players Weekend coming up where all the players have their nicknames on the back of their jerseys. And some of them either are from their teammates or it's ones that they put in there. But there's some good ones. You want to run down them?
Yes, we should. And I'm not 100% sure they're on both games of the Bay Bridge series. They are on... They will be on one of them, okay. At least. So
that's fun, though.
But at least I'm sure it's just the 23rd and the 24th is when they're supposed to be, and the Giants ended up having a day off on the 23rd. But, yeah, let's run down the nicknames, though, because there's one, especially on the A's and as well as the Giants, that have both caught my eye.
Which ones?
Well, I mean, just run down the A's ones first, and I'll let you know which one.
Okay, you want me to just run through them all?
Yeah.
All right, so Brett Anderson is Noon. Homer Bailey, Homer. Chris Bassett, Seabass.
Okay.
Okay. Ryan Buchter, Book. Mark Canna, Tom Ace. I forgot the reasoning for that one, but I remember it was something funny. I want to say I had to do something with Ace Ventura. He used the same one last year.
Oh, okay.
Matt Chapman is Hurtado, and that's actually honoring a friend of his, who a college teammate who actually had passed away from a bone cancer. So, you know,
good
sweet
on Chapman for
on
that.
There. Chris Davis, KD. I mean, that's what he goes by anyway. Let's see. Jake Diekman is Gutted Out. Marco Estrada, Punch. I like that one. Mike Fiers is Smokey. Dustin Garneau is Drago. I do want to know if that's from Game of Thrones.
Probably.
Drago.
I mean, you know, why don't they, if you're going to at least do this nickname thing, like Chris Davis, get a little more creative than KD.
Like Crush, at least. Maybe.
Something. I mean, you know, just something. Because it's Players Weekend. You're supposed to do a little something different than just your regular old nickname that people might call you. I mean, people call him KD. People call him Crush. Oh, do something different.
Something
be a little
bit
creative.
Off.
I don't know.
Like, I like Liam Hendricks, Slida. I do like the Slida. Chris Harmon, Worm.
Slida.
Slida.
A little Australian on there, yeah.
Ramon Laureano, Ramoncito. I do like this one from Sean Manaya, the Manialator. Good one. Nick Martini, this one's a good one. The Martini emoji.
That's the one that stood out to me.
That
just
one's good.
Can I put an emoji up there?
I do want to see if they actually do that. That'd be awesome. Oli for Matt Olson. He's Mara Petit is used. I do like Josh Fegley's PTBNL, the player to be named later.
Yeah.
I love that. Chad Pinder is Chai. Steven Piscotty is Momo. Jerks and Profar, El Patron. Tanner Roark is T-Row. Marcus Simeon is Simi. Joachim Soria is Pepe. Blake Trinan is Train. Lou Trevino is Sweet Lou. Ah, cute. Wee Chung Wang is Wang.
All right, Wang. There you go. I think the Manialator is a really good one, though.
Yeah.
The Manialator, I can dig. But, I mean, in the end, these guys got to be a little more, just more creative. I mean, there's some that are, but in the end, if you're doing what Matt Chapman's doing, then yeah, that's totally get that because that's just paying tribute to his friend. But
Giants side?
The Giants side will go over, but real quick on the D-backs, there's just one I'm just looking like down the list right now. And the D-backs, I just like that Ketel Marte is calling himself El Nino.
Ooh, if you watch look out for that storm.
If you watch Chris Farley's little skit on Saturday Night Live back in that day.
The other favorite actually from the Indians that you brought up was Shane Bieber is not Justin.
Not Justin.
That's a good thing to note.
Yeah, and what was it? Kyle Seager one time was Corey's brother. That was a really good one,
that's
too.
A good one.
But the Giants, though, I mean,
you can run down this.
I mean, these ones are just kind of, I mean, Scooter Jeanette, Ryan. I mean, what is his real name, Ryan?
Yeah, that's actually why, because Scooter is a nickname, so he decided to go with his real name.
All right,
Ryan.
There we go. Joe Panic, JP, although he's not even there anymore. Kevin Pillar, KP. Wow. Buster Posey, better than last year's Buster, Humbus, which is fine. Samardzija, Shark, obviously. Sandoval, Panda. Austin Slater is AC, because AC Slater, that makes sense.
Got it. That's
Will
a good
Smith,
one.
Smitty, You could have done something better with that, Will Smith. No
maybe
offense.
Maybe something with actual. Maybe the genie.
Big Will. Willennium.
Fresh Prince.
Yes. Something along the lines. And Stephen Vogt is, I believe, obviously. Tony Watson is Tone Ranger.
That's good.
Yastrzemski, Yaz.
Oh, yeah.
Here's one. Brandon Belt. Bob.
Bob.
Bob is
what's his
nickname.
Middle name?
I don't know.
I'll look it up real quick.
Bob. But Bob makes sense for a guy that's hitting 220 with a 293 slugging percentage and a 296 on base percentage since July 15th. That makes a lot of sense with Bob.
I was actually hoping it was like his middle name was Oscar and that was his, like, you know, his lettering Bob, but it's Kyle.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Okay.
There is an outrage, though. A little bit of outrage.
With what?
Somebody you don't see on this list here is Alex Dickerson. And one of the names, obviously, he has a very famous nickname amongst Giants fans.
Yeah.
Would be just straight up, you know, Richard Dick.
Yes.
And people would be cheering it, no problem. But MLB actually said no, that he can't use it. So
that's
a little
a shame.
Upset over that. But here's the problem. There is a problem. Baltimore, let me find it here. They have a pitcher that is actually using that nickname. Trying to find who it is here, actually. But they actually let them use a nickname because they said it's his nickname because his name is Richard.
Yeah.
Trying to see who it is. I forgot who it is. I'll look for it afterwards. But yeah.
All right.
So that's not so good there. I think he should have used something like, I think he used the name Grandpa for his.
He did use Grandpa.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, he's a little bit of an older player who just came in and started just raking at an older age.
I think he should have done Richard. Honestly, I think he should have gone with Richard.
Yeah. And for the 510 on the Chill Not Body text line, you're complaining about unoriginal, but like El Nino. Okay. LOL. Yeah. You know what? In my head, it sounded a lot better because I had that Chris Farley skit running through my head when he was the weatherman and he was talking about El Nino. Recommend you look that up on YouTube. But probably didn't sound all too great now that I'm looking back at it. But thank you, 510.
And from the 650, Drago is Rocky. How did I not realize that? You're right. That's right, 650.
I mean,
I'm wrong.
You're just keeping it up with. I mean,
it's Cal Drogo, not Drago.
No, that's true.
My mistake.
Yeah, that's true.
My mistake. You know what? I admit to my mistakes.
Yeah.
It's okay. I apologize, everybody.
It's okay. Coming up, though, we will go over Hard Knocks because the debut episode was last night for the Raiders, and there's a couple of things that I found kind of interesting in there. And also, if you looked at Twitter right after the show was over and you watched it really on time, then man, there were a lot of haters.
I know.
Talk about that next. Stephen Langford, Anna Kagaki's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Saturday, August 17th, John Dickinson and Jim Cosimore are broadcasting live from Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill.
Shut your yapper.
Come meet and greet with JD and Coz from 9 to 1 while you check out the luxury home appliances at Friedman's.
Sleep? That's impressive.
Say, I'm sorry, sir.
Saturday, August 17th, from 9 to 1 on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7. The Game. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kagadakis.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with our product experts. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. Feel free to follow us on Twitter at Nice Guy Steven or at Anna Kagarakis. That's K-A-G-A-R-A-K-I-S.
Good job.
Damn,
nicely done. You
had to think
well
about
the spelling bee.
I had to look up at the ceiling to think about that one because, you know.
I think it's to the left, I believe, is when you think, when you're trying to like recall something, it's to the left. You tend to look towards the left.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know it's one of the directions. I'm just trying to remember. But there's always like a specific way that your eyes tend to go when you're trying to recall something.
Really? I just looked up.
Yeah, it's up. But your eyes go one certain way.
Oh, man. All right. So feel free to text a chill. Not everybody text line to 95795. If you watched the Hard Knocks first episode last night for the Raiders. And, I mean, if you really were interested in it, if you were kind of disappointed, I mean, I just feel like expectations were super high. But John Gruden did have something funny to say in his press conference beside the whole
good bobblehead, isn't it? When there was a bobblehead in front of him, his own bobblehead sitting at the front of the podium. But he had this to say when he was talking about whether him and the team will watch Hard Knocks together.
We're not going to be eating Cracker Jacks and peanuts and watching it. We got meetings. We got the Rams coming in here. And I know players, I'm sure, are excited to see the show. They've done a good job, the Hard Knocks people here, and putting it together. I'm not going to say anything further because I'll be in a meeting.
So he will be in a meeting. Probably, I think he's going to watch it.
Of course he's going to watch it.
I think he's going to watch it.
Of course. How do you not watch? You want to see also what's going on? Maybe you might miss. It would be a huge miss if he doesn't watch it, because he should know things that might be going on amongst the team. So if there's something like, example, Jonathan Abrams was kind of in the spotlight, obviously, a lot throughout the first episode.
Right.
At first, you know, just a lot of fun, having a good time. But definitely somebody you could tell was a pretty cocky son of a gun.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you. He was a... Is this something that you want to see from him as a rookie? Is he a little too arrogant maybe coming out? Because at first I thought it was great.
Loved it.
It kind of got a little... I thought it got a little much at the end, though.
Loved it.
Yeah?
Loved it.
The whole salmon,
whatever. There was a lot of people... There were a lot of people who took umbrage with the fact that he didn't know how to pronounce salmon.
I thought that was fake, though. Honestly, I think he played that up.
Probably.
That's like I love the horse part. I thought that was funny.
The horse riding between him and Cleland Furl.
Which I've kind
Ferrell
of
Furl or Furl?
Furl or Ferrell?
It's either Furl or Ferrell, because I've been pronouncing it Ferrell the entire time. Analysts have been pronouncing it Ferrell the entire time. Mike Mayock pronounced it Ferrell the entire time, and then Liev Schreiber comes out and calls him Furl. I don't know if it's Furl or Ferrell anymore.
Hmm.
But overall, though, I thought it was a very – it's what you'd expect from a first episode of these Hard Knocks things. And I think that when I looked on Twitter afterwards and saw the trending stuff with Hard Knocks, it was kind of – it was a little – people were overanalyzing it.
I think the whole idea is there's such a high expectation because of the cast of characters involved – that you're thinking, oh, you're going to have this drama right away.
Right.
You're not going to have this drama right away. In all honesty, you look at these guys all together because you have AB, you have Vontaze Burfict, you have Richie Incognito. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to start blowing punches right at each other in the beginning?
That's exactly what people expect.
No,
especially,
it's not going to
happen. I mean, with Vontaze Burfict especially, with seeing what kind of player he's been in the past, I think they were expecting a little more from that. But yeah, it's just people expected just people the guys to come out throwing haymakers right away.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, though, I think as far as just visually, you're not going to see a better Hard Knocks for just landscape shots where you're overlooking Napa Valley.
Incredible.
It was better than with the Cleveland team last year where you're just overlooking wherever they were, which was not all that entertaining.
I mean, you have a perfect setting right now with Napa and everything in the Bay Area, but Hard Knocks, the production value itself is amazing. You look at everything from the editing, the cinematography, the music. The entire product is so beautifully done that you have to appreciate. And I also feel like that the Raiders themselves are kind of perfectly fit for this. Even from, you know, just starting off with the Autumn Wind is a Raider. You know, it just fits so perfectly with the whole production.
Yeah.
That I think it really adds to the piece. And you couldn't have gotten a better team than the Raiders, in all honesty, for Hard Knocks when it comes to the production and the storylines.
Right. And when you got that opening theme with that, as you said, with that autumn wind and you just have it in the background over the Hard Knocks theme, you get I get chills in general just mm-hmm. with that Hard Knocks theme alone. But then when the autumn wind stuff comes up and you get I forgot the name of the guy who does the voice, but when you get the autumn wind is a pirate,
yeah,
you know, and you get that sort of thing. Then that's just, it gives me chills. And then they also had the Autumn Wind remix later on in the show.
It was cool.
Which I think you should, just watch the episode for that alone, because that was fantastic. The Dreams and Nightmares thing, that went viral with what Gruden said, but that just came out, right at the start.
Yeah.
And that's a
opening scene there.
And then, what I did find interesting though, was the spotlight they put on Ronald Ollie,
yes.
Because that was out of training camp. You're getting a few big stories here and there out of Raiders training camp, but more of the prominent ones was Antonio Brown's feet.
That was the first storyline with AB.
And then Ronald Ollie getting cut as they added the former Last Chance U star. And if you watched him on Last Chance U, you wouldn't think that he was always the best player on that team, because he was a motivational player. He was a fan favorite, but also he was always talking back to coaches, kind of not doing the drills sometimes. And I think what was his saying? Can't make the club if you're just in the tub, which is, and then he just went out and I mean, the way they made him look and the way that he was kind of represented there was not a good look for Ronald Ollie in general. But I did think that it was interesting, though. I haven't seen, if I recall, watching guys get cut in Hard Knocks is one of the harder things to really, it's not one of the harder things, but it's one of the more dramatic things that you see. You see the coaches, they feel like they got to have them come into the office and they have to have a sit down, like one-on-one with them. But then, when Ronald Ollie came in, Gruden's just like, hey, you know what? Let's cut any of these effing guys that don't want to be here. It's like
right away.
And then it was just boom. Like, when you heard the news that Ronald Ollie got cut last week, you're wondering how that was going to be represented in the show. But other than that, there really wasn't much besides, obviously, Jonathan Abrams, as you said, just kind of being all talkative. And I think it scares people. It scares people when guys are cocky. That's it.
I don't know if it scares people. Maybe
it does.
I just think he just likes to be in the spotlight. I think that's the thing, that you're seeing somebody who wants to be in the spotlight, but he needs to prove himself. That's what you want to see. He's somebody that's very young, needs to prove himself. I mean, what did he say to John Gruden? Did he say something? Oh, yeah, go ahead and cut me. You ain't going to cut me.
Right.
Like, be careful. John Gruden might be one of those guys.
I like that, though. I like that out of a first-round pick.
He's confident, which I like.
Right.
Like I said, I was very entertained by him. I love the whole snacks thing in the beginning. He was talking about how everybody wants their bougie snacks. And he, like I said, the horse thing was fun. He had a good time. He had a lot of energy out there. He got super excited when he got to meet G-Eazy.
Right.
I know. I saw that. Hey, they did the whole Old Town Road.
Yeah,
how much you love that.
Yeah. What? I mean, it just had to get involved, didn't it? It just had to get involved.
When you involve horses.
I do blame Abrams for that, because he requested it. He requested Old Town Road mm-hmm. be played toward the end. There was one other thing, though, that kind of caught my eye, and it was just they represented the Raiders as a organization that's all about family and their alumni and bringing old players back.
Yes.
Well, after they cut Ronald Ollie and they brought in Westbrooks, they talked about the number 63. And then Gruden made the joke that how can there be a worse number than 63? I'm like, And then you look back at the history of number 63 with the Raiders, and this guy could go down as one of the greatest linemen of all time, not just in Raider franchise history, but in NFL history. They put him up there on those lists. If you look, I love lists, and I've looked up the best offensive linemen in the NFL of all time just to try and bone up on my NFL history. And Gene Upshaw's right up there, and Gene Upshaw was number 63. Huh. So it's just there's a little thing there where I was like, maybe should have done a little research on the number 63
probably
beforehand.
Just forgot it for a moment there.
I think they did. I think
he did. There's so many numbers.
Right.
It's hard to remember everybody's numbers and everything. And who? I mean, the idea that you had to look it up first off.
Yeah.
But that would have been nice to have known that. I do like that scene and how they actually switched to Westbrook.
Yeah.
It was very creatively done altogether.
Well, it shows how much Gruden values. I mean, that was the talk last year when he brought in guys like Jordy Nelson. It's just Gruden values veterans. He mm-hmm. values these guys. And then he comes in, cuts the rookie who comes in from Last Chance U, who they might have signed just as a publicity stunt to get people to watch Hard Knocks. And he's just like, well, if he's not going to be on the field, let's cut him. So sorry if this is like spoiling it for you, but really, Hard Knocks, it's not really...
no real spoilers.
There's no spoilers to really have. It's more just visually, it's just something to really behold.
It's still very entertaining. I did also love hearing from John Madden and seeing the seven sled.
The seven-man sled.
The seven-man sled. Yeah. That was cool. That was a cool little scene there. I like how he did that. And it's kind of a nice little old-school homage to him.
Right.
So to see what he had done and what, obviously what he meant to the organization, to NFL as a whole. And... just kind of a look back at, you know, maybe sometimes some of these old school methods, they're, you know, they're not outdated. It's something that all people should be doing, all teams should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And I mean, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe teams have just grown out of that at this point. But
he did say it gets rid of hangovers.
That's true. That's true. And it's the best way to do that. But I don't know. If I mean, players, I feel like nowadays are just more involved playing video games on the weekend and going on Tinder rather than just going out drinking. And all these guys, they all have families and stuff by the looks of it. They seem to be pretty well set up there, and that's what a big thing was. It was about families and stuff. They had the family dinner. I don't know if you see that all that often with these other guys, but from the 707 on the Chill Not Body text line, all the best DBs. Talk, Sherman, Ramsey, Peterson, ET3 goes with the positions.
It does, but at the same time, it just felt like it was just a little fake to me at the end there. It was just overdone for the camera. And I think, but I understand why he did it. This is his shot. He's a young, excited player. And I like the guy. I really do. I just think at the end, it was really good, but I think at the end it was a little much.
From the 925, I think Gruden's dislike for 63 was due to Ollie wearing it. That's how I took it. And the other guy, guys, it's a shot at Ollie. Yeah. I mean, you can take it both ways, I guess. But I mean, really, when I took it, I'm just looking at the number 63 in general. But that was just me, I guess. That was just me. Maybe you're right, 925 and 510, both saying it's a shot at Ollie rather than just a shot at the number 63 overall.
The only thing I would have liked to have seen a little bit more in the first episode, which I remember they did this with the Buccaneers with Jameis Winston, is looking at the family, the backgrounds. Because that was one of the things I actually really liked, was kind of hearing more of how he grew up, things like that. Even looking at Derek Carr growing out of Fresno, obviously a different kind of background. But I'd like to, hopefully they address this later, like all the stuff that he does within the community. Because I know that he is huge when it comes to, like, with the Fresno Children's Hospital, he's really involved there. That's like one of his big organizations that he supports. And I'd like to see him kind of bring that to light and show the stuff that he does within the community, how he's still involved with his hometown.
Right. And I think, you know what, though, they're not only going to do that, they're going to put a hard focus, I think, also on Antonio Brown's upbringing as well. He had a pretty crazy one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
In Miami, I think he was just living from like hotel to hotel, and living in a car at one point. He had a crazy upbringing, so I think they'll dive deeper into that as well.
But then that's the other thing too, when you're looking at this episode, like just thinking critically about the episode, the beginning and the end to me were phenomenal. It kind of felt like a sandwich. Like the bread was great in the sandwich, but the middle kind of felt long and kind of dragged on. So it was kind of like a cheap meat that you'd find at your deli at a grocery store in the middle. So you have like that really good bread, but it's kind of like, the meat was okay.
So it's just like a little bit of just branded meat rather than the original stuff straight from the deli.
And that's why I want more of that kind of the personal side, because that's what I love about Hard Knocks, is when they really kind of get in depth, because you want to love these players. And anytime you watch Hard Knocks, you're sitting there, you're rooting for these guys. You're rooting for this team. And that's kind of the point of Hard Knocks, too. Not only to get a behind-the-scenes look of this team, but also to really get to know these players, the teams, the coaches, and kind of get to know who they are and make them human.
Right. I think, you know, too, is Gruden and Mayock already expressed their displeasure for having the Hard Knocks crew on the scene here at training camp? Like, they've already shown that in their introductory press conference. They're not a fan of it, right? Like, I'm thinking that Gruden, mostly, you didn't see any of the defensive line, really. You saw the first-round pick, but you didn't really see him play.
Yeah.
You didn't see the tight end, Darren Waller, play, which is a big question mark to a lot of people nationally. But really, on the inside, Darren Waller is apparently having a crazy camp where he's just beating everyone in one-on-one drills. Then you got a guy like Max Crosby, who they feel like can be a good rookie. Then they also got Keelan Doss, who's an undrafted guy who they didn't profile at all. I mean, maybe they will profile these guys, but I think there's going to be a lot that they want to keep under the radar for a bit. And there was no mention of Mo Hurst either, was drafted in the fifth round, who was projected to be a first rounder until he had his heart condition. So, I think they're going to do a profile on him eventually, but I think there's going to be a lot of things that they want to keep secret too.
Yeah, I know the next episode they're talking about, you know, you have the Rams in town for some one-on-ones. They're going to go up against the Rams right now at training camp because they're going to be playing them. So you're going to see a lot of that next episode, be kind of that whole John Gruden, Sean McVay, the the pupil against the master, whatever you want to say about it. So it's going to be a lot of the focus for the next week's episode.
100%. It's just going to be focused on how Sean McVay is just that young John Gruden, or how John Gruden was when they were when he was coming up with the Jets, when he was, you know, when he was who was the quarterback? Randall Cunningham, when he was helping him come up. It's going to be a lot of that. From the 510, the number 63 refers to Barrett Robbins, you idiots.
That's not nice.
Well, look up Gene Upshaw then. I mean, if I'm looking at it right now, I'm looking at a picture. 63. Plus, I think also we got to appreciate just how quickly they put these things together. It's it's very last second.
And you know how much work it takes to put together stories like this, to edit something like that? I mean, you're talking about a multiple camera shoot. And it's not an easy feat to put something like that together. Usually they say with even like a one camera shoot for 1 minute of video, it takes about an hour to edit that together. So just think about what they did and the short amount of time they turned this around. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. And from the 408 also, Josh Jacobs lived in his car too. Not too sure about AB. Yeah, Josh Jacobs, he'll definitely be profiled too. He'll be they'll do something on him, because if you just watched any of the draft this year, you know Josh Jacobs' story, and it's pretty incredible where he's at now. But as we move on, though, by the way, Jerry Rice, it's Dwight Clark Day over at 49er camp, and Jerry Rice will be joining Joe Lo and Dibs coming up at 8 a.m., so you don't want to miss that. That's in just over a couple of hours. Again, Jerry Rice at 8 a.m., but we are looking at the Niners right now, because there's only so much we could say about Hard Knocks. Just go and watch it, and really just don't go into it with these expectations that you're just going to see fights and cussing out the entire time. You'll see a little bit of that, but for the most part, it's just a well shot. It's just a well shot thing. So I really recommend you watch it. But as we move on, though, I'm looking at this 49ers unofficial depth chart. It's the first one they've released. And really, this is just showing what they'll do in this first game of the preseason. And right now, they got DeForest Buckner on the Eric Armstead on the opposite side of Dee Ford. And I think right now it's pretty much solidified that Nick Bosa is most likely going to be the starting defensive end by the time the season starts. But Eric Armstead, when you look at it, in the past, when he's drafted in the first round out of Oregon, kind of been a bit of a disappointment. You don't want to put the label bust on him just yet, but the fact that he is your starting defensive end, I think he's going to be one that you're going to need to watch, especially this upcoming weekend against the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's a prove it time for Eric Armstead right now, for sure. So that's definitely a moment there that you got to keep an eye on what he's going to be doing this weekend. The one that I'm intrigued about, there's actually two. One, with the quarterback battle, you got C.J. Beathard listed as the number two quarterback. Nick Mullins is number three. So who's performing? I mean, you saw what Nick Mullins did at the end of last year, how he stepped up for this team. I'm kind of surprised by this, actually.
Yeah, I think they're going to see C.J. Beathard get those first-team reps, because Jimmy Garoppolo is already ruled out for week one.
Right.
So you're most likely going to be seeing C.J. Beathard probably for the first half, and then Nick Mullins for the second half. That's most likely how it's going to shake down, unless there's anything else that really goes down. But you're looking at the rest of it, though. Yeah, you're right, though. It's a quarterback battle for those two. That's one thing to also keep an eye on, is these old guys. It's really make it or miss now. It's just, you got to go out there and you got to perform. And C.J. Beathard, he really, you know, he's a tough guy. He went out, he took his shots, he took a beating when he was out there, but he also had a couple of bad plays in the fourth quarter, which led to some losses. And then Nick Mullins came in, and he played well for an undrafted free agent, but you just don't know if that's sustainable for Nick Mullins. So the quarterback battle for them, the backup quarterback battle, especially with Jimmy Garoppolo having not started an entire season before, it could be a bigger position than we really expect. Don't want to say that just yet. You hope Garoppolo can start all 16.
Exactly.
But also, though, the backup quarterback position, even though it may not seem all that important, the battle is going to be there, and these guys are going to be giving it their all for sure.
But like you said, you're hoping that you don't even have to worry about that throughout this season. Hopefully you see Jimmy Garoppolo for all 16 games.
And Akello Witherspoon is your starting cornerback, opposite side Richard Sherman, with Jason Verrett in the back. And if Jason Verrett's, you know, your second string cornerback,
that's not going to happen for long if he stays on the field. They really – like, we know what Jason Verrett can bring. And coming from that 2014 draft, which is actually insane, by the way. Tomorrow, when we have a little more time, I'll go down the list of the guys that were drafted in 2014. After Hard Knocks, I looked it up because I just felt like looking who was taken above Derek Carr before that second round. And that first-round draft class from 2014 is insane. Verrett was a part of that, and you know what he's going to give you if he actually stays in the game. But he's only been in five games in the past 3 years. So he will take that number one spot. But Akello Witherspoon here, he's going to be one to watch out for. Mitch Wishnowsky, believe it or not, fourth-round draft pick, new punter. That's going to be one to watch out for as well. If you have nothing to look to, watch the punts.
There you go.
If you're that bored, you know.
How about the one you've been most excited about? How about the wide receiver battle?
I mean, you got Dante Pettis listed at number one. Kendrick Bourne is the guy that Kyle Shanahan said has improved the most. That he said yesterday after training camp that Kendrick Bourne's really been the one that's improved. The other guys, they've had their flashes, but no one's been as consistent as Kendrick Bourne has. So you're wondering if Kendrick Bourne can take over that Dante Pettis spot. And I'm hoping they get into the red zone because I really want to see who their red zone threat is going to be. Maybe it would just be George Kittle, but also you're going to need to have an option at wide receiver in the red zone if you want to be a threat at all to score.
Exactly.
So I'm looking at Kendrick Bourne versus Dante Pettis is a good one. And then you're also looking at Laken Tomlinson, Ben Garland at starting center, and Mike Person at right guard. Those three, the interior O-line, you're already solidified on the outside with Staley and McGlinchey, but it's that interior O-line, which I'm also going to be watching for, too.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this weekend. We got our first taste of football for the Bay Area here this weekend, so it should be exciting. Real quick, I do want to give a quick shout-out. I'm going to be doing the SF Stair Climb in September along with Guru. That's going to be coming up. We're raising money for first responders. I tweeted out actually where you could donate, so if you could please help donate, it's to help benefit first responders who experience PTSD.
And that is at Anna Kagarakis. That'll do it for us. Joe Lo and Dibs are coming up with Jerry Rice at 8 o'clock to talk about Dwight Clark on Dwight Clark Day at 49ers training camp. Thanks, everybody.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.